The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier, Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks, and welcome back to episode 78 of Columbia Calling. Who would have thought that in December 2014 we would be taking this tiny niche show to episode 78? And to show you how important this episode is to us, and of course hopefully to you, you know, as we close out 2014 and look towards 2015, we've got a very special guest on the show today. I know I say this all the time, but to have Julia Sims Cobb, a freelance correspondent for Reuters and the Washington Post, talking about her great-grandfather's diary from his time at the turn of the last century, so 1900 till 1902. He was here in Colombia, in many of the regions that I know lots of you have traveled or dream of traveling, and indeed where I am seated now, because I'm in Mompox. The internet connection is okay, but I'm here in Mompox, sweating it out. And imagine that, because I've got fans and air conditioning, but in 1900, on a dredging boat looking for gold along the Magdalena River near to Magangay and other far-off places, we've got Julia's great-grandfather. And so we're going to be discussing these diaries. They come in a beautifully embossed, leather-bound book. And, of course, they look like letters written to kind of remind himself of home and, indeed, remind himself of what he has done in these places. And there are wonderful photographs, of course, of Cartagena without the sophistication and of course, the paddle steamers of the era that came along the Magdalena River. So it's truly fantastic to have Julia on the show, and in the next couple of segments we'll be talking to her about these diaries and how they came to be and everything about Colombia at this period of time. So yes, as we close out the year, most of you will know that Santa Fe of Bogota are the new champions of Colombian football, if that's something that rocks your boat. James Rodriguez, the Colombian football star playing for Real Madrid, has lifted the World Club Cup trophy when they beat San Lorenzo of Argentina. And what else is going on? Well, yeah, the government estimates that 28,000 people will be departing from Bogota this Tuesday coming. Can you imagine that? 28,000. It's the peak in domestic travel. But of course, that is everywhere as we all head home to Christmas and, of course, the Christmas period over to New Year with our loved ones, families, and friends. So wherever you are in the world, I'm hoping that you guys also spend a great one. I am with the heart of my wife's family here in Mompox with however many cousins, uncles, aunts, and so on. Only one grandmother, but she's indomitable for those who've met her. And as we close out the year, let's shed a little thought towards the peace process and the supposed indefinite ceasefire that is taking place, that started on the 20th of December. So let's hope that this can hold and that 2015 brings and yields the greater possibilities for a brighter future for our Colombia. It's not just my Colombia, it's our Colombia, because you guys out there are listeners to Columbia Calling, and you also have a love for this country. So without further ado, I'm going to just sign off quickly and say, listen, we love to hear from you. So please, columbiacalling@gmail.com. We're at Columbia Calling on Twitter. Of course, there's the Facebook page, which is, you know, obviously mandatory these days. That's Columbia Calling. And, of course, the website. It's www.columbiacallingradio.com. And you can find all the links to past episodes, some particularly good ones out there, on iTunes and on the website. There are links to each of them. But iTunes to Columbia Calling, and you'll find all 78 episodes listed there. You might want to hear about the guy who was kidnapped in Colombia, or you might want to hear about people working in NGOs, you know, like War Child, or just other literary ones, because we've had a very literary year here on Columbia Calling. Many people producing books, releasing books, publishing books. But to close out this literary year, we will be looking at the diary belonging to the great-grandfather of Julia Sims Cobb, who in a remarkable sort of, let's say, effort of synchronicity is here years later doing kind of something adventurous like her great-grandfather. So that's it. We'll be coming right back. Don't go away with Julia Sims Cobb here on Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. I hope you enjoy the show. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota talking to Julia Sims Cobb. She's a journalist, a freelancer, but she's a journalist here from the US, educated in Scotland, indeed. It's something new for you out there anyway. But she's originally from Colorado. And the reason I got her on the show, not only is she working frequently for the Reuters and the Washington Post, so we're talking some real editorial, let's say weight here. That's how you know. She's here in Colombia cutting her teeth in this field, but we've come to know one another because some months ago she and her parents came down and visited Mompos, and that's, of course, those of you who listen to the show will know that that's where I have my little hotel. Now, I wondered why Julia was so interested in this place, and it's just incredible, really. Julia, welcome on the show.
I want
you to tell us why this was so important, this trip for your parents.
Well, me and my parents wanted to do a trip down the Magdalena, or as far down the Magdalena as we could get safely, right? Because obviously it's not, still not the safest river in the world. Because I have a great-grandfather, my father's grandfather, who was named Harry Lewis Cobb, and he was an engineer from Massachusetts. And in 1900, he got in a boat and went down to Barranquilla to take up a job working on a gold dredging boat. So he built the boat from scratch in Barranquilla in the port there, and they then took it into the interior of Colombia on the Magdalena, and he was there for almost 2 years, going back and forth and you know, doing rudimentary repairs on this prehistoric sounding boat that they built, and dredging for gold and taking little excursions into the jungle. And so we wanted to do sort of a retrace of his steps as much as we could do.
It's so interesting for me, this, and I know it's interesting for the listeners out there, because we're imagining a Colombia of 1900. Mm-hmm. And so now we're talking about the real conflict between the liberals and the conservatives at this time, and this is peppered through the diary. Now, I have to quickly interrupt this flow here and say, we have the diary before us here in the studio. Yes. It's this wonderful leather-bound, you can hear it, could you hear the pages turn there, you know? It's a leather-bound with a proper gold embossed, you know, date. You know, it's August 9th, 1900 to June 11th, 1902. This is log number one. And it's still held together today, and there are wonderful photos within it, you know, black and white sepia fading away, just showing the sort of the history. And for those of you, you know, interested in Colombian stuff, there's all these pictures of the Magdalena River, Barranquilla, back when it was kind of scenic.
Yeah, colonial. Yeah.
Colonial. There were a couple of buildings, you know. But also pictures towards the end in Cartagena before, let's say, the sophistication of Cartagena, because it's still a bit ramshackle. There's the Castillo San Felipe with jungle growing up around the turret. There's a view taken from the Cerro de la Popa, you know, the monastery that overlooks the city, which I believe that you guys, when you went back, had tried to set up the same photograph. How was that?
Yeah, well, we went to Cartagena for a few days on our way to Mompos, and I'd taken photos of all the photos in the diary, and we walked around Cartagena retaking the photos. So he's got, you know, photos of Plaza Bolivar, so we went and tried to get the same view, and we actually couldn't because now the trees are too overgrown on the angle that he took it from, so it's kind of ruined. I was like, Cartagena, trim your trees. But, yeah, we went up to La Popa, to the monastery, to retake the same photo, and it was actually kind of hard because, you know, it was easy to figure out where he took the photo from. There's, like, the one obvious, you know, sort of photo spot, but the city doesn't look anything alike, and even some of the landmarks, you know, the swampy bits, the sort of water ways aren't there anymore. They've been, you know, cemented, and now they have high-rise hotels on them, so it was actually kind of difficult to recreate the exact angle, but it was also very hot.
So so you took the photos quickly and retreated to the aircon
of your taxi.
But I mean, 114 years later, I mean, but so tell me a little bit, I mean, because, you know, we've jumped in onto this diary, but let's get a little bit more background about you, Juliet. Now, how is it you came to choose to be here in Colombia? Is it because of this diary?
No, I actually did not. The diary we had in a trunk in our garage for like a decade. My grandparents died and my father and his three siblings, you know, sort of divvied up the heirlooms. And this was one of the things, I think my aunt might have actually had this one instead of us. But anyway, it's someone, one of the siblings had it in storage, and it was always, you know, on the to-do list of, you know, we're going to open that trunk and we're going to go through and transcribe this thing. And Harry, throughout his life, is a big diary keeper, and my aunt has later diaries that he kept after he returned to the States, and he's a very posterity-conscious guy. So eventually my father, my aunt had a look over it, and she sent it to my father. And my father started to transcribe it. And that's kind of when we got all this extra information. We kind of knew that he'd been in Colombia, but we didn't really have a sense of when and why and what the details were. So I ended up in Colombia a few months before my father started the major transcription. I came as an intern for Reuters on my year abroad from the University of Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. I had to take a year abroad because I studied Spanish and I didn't want to go to university. So I sort of harangued them into giving me an internship for the 9 months. So
I think that's fine. It shows a great level of, you know, creativity in that year abroad. I didn't go to a university in my year abroad. I went and taught in a bilingual school in Guatemala City. So that was it. I wasn't going to go to Valencia.
And
or
look
Alicante.
At you now.
And look at me now. I'm a struggling freelance journalist with a side project in a hotel. But look at me now, happy
there
in Colombia. That's what it's about. Now, that's fantastic. It's so good to hear this. And, you know, you've been proactive. You know, you're doing it. You've obviously wanted to get into journalism. You're following it. And you know, how has it been, because I know you've been sent into Venezuela as well for Reuters. How is it, you know, working in Colombia and Venezuela, what would you say to describe a little bit to listeners out there as, you know, is it particularly dangerous to be a reporter, or do you just find yourself taking things carefully?
I mean, certainly in Venezuela, I think it's a different enchilada altogether, right? In terms of the just basic security situation as a person walking around, and doubly as a journalist. Mm-hmm. I think the government there is much more conscientious about, you know, following you and knowing what you're doing and having your phone number. And, you know, the vice minister of communications called me a couple days into my latest stay there, which was in August, and was like, "Hello, we're updating our database. We want to know what university you went to." And so that was kind of, I mean, it's on the internet. I don't know why they had to call me and ask me, but it was that, so that was interesting. In terms of Colombia, I mean, I like Bogota a lot. I have a lot of love for Bogota. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of dirty and chaotic and smoggy and rains a lot, but I really like it. I think it's a city that's very alive and a city that has, you know, people in the streets doing stuff all the time, which you don't get in a lot of big capital cities because everyone is, you know, sort of in their little bubble. But mm-hmm. I think you get interaction here that's sort of refreshing.
There is a dynamism here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth of it. And you know, it's always going to be exciting. You're young and you're out there and you're striving for the story. So it's always going to be exciting, especially when you're plunged into something as well, as weighty. It's the truth of it. As important as, you know, writing for Reuters and the Washington Post. So really, I mean, your great-grandfather, he came down to dredge gold and has written these journals. You're following in his footsteps. I mean, that's it. You are a scribe as well. There we are. So how nice. Now, have you ever found yourself writing like him. I'm just looking at Paige here. Now, the date is... I don't know what the date is. It's the 11th of... November 7th, 1900, I assume, looking at it.
Yes.
Now, he goes, you know, it's funny. There is a young Spaniard in the next room who is studying English aloud. He is evidently just beginning. I'm sorry for him. I mean, you know, that's quite cutting.
Yeah, no, he's a snarky guy. I've kind of enjoyed that. He's got some photo captions that are really funny, including... a photo that he's taken, and he writes a diary entry about it as well, but a photo that he's taken standing in the port in Barranquilla, you know, they're still building the boat, it's very early in the diary, and there's two boats that you can see are just, like, right up against each other in the photo, and it's kind of faded, but, and then he describes it in the diary, and his caption for the photo is Colombian steering, which I think is, he's a pretty snarky guy.
Yeah. So he didn't get much past him, you know. He was, but give me a background here. So he came down here. How old was he when? How old was Harry Cobb when he came down to Colombia in 1900?
I believe when he came down, he was 27. Because at some point in the diary, he writes about turning 28. I believe that's the first birthday, and then the second birthday. Because he's down here about just under 2 years.
I mean, that's a real adventure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And of course, he wasn't married and anything. 27. So he was out here, you know, trying to seek his fortune. Yeah. This was El Dorado, of course. And he was dredging for gold. How successful was he?
You know, they don't talk about the gold a lot.
No.
I have a feeling. I have a feeling that it wasn't necessarily a very successful endeavor. He's not. I mean, there's one or two American investors who are paying everyone to build the boat and to take it down the river. One of them goes on the boat with him, but Harry doesn't seem to do a lot of the dredging, the mining. He's kind of there if stuff goes wrong. So sometimes when he's on the boat, you can tell he's really bored because he'll write, his entry will be like, walked around the boat, read, wrote, and then the next day will be same as yesterday. So there's a couple of like periods, you know, a couple of week or two long sections where he's pretty bored.
Such is life on a boat,
yeah.
Too.
Oh, I mean, it's hot. It's so hot.
Well, you know that. You went to
I have all the sympathy in the world for no air conditioning.
No air conditioning. And if the boat's not flowing, you know, there's no breeze.
Right.
So the river's not there. But he went to places that today, you know, are still off limits, you know, sort of between Neche and Achi. Those are in Antioquia, I do believe, sort of been Sucre, Antioquia, Cordoba. And I remember when you got in touch with me, it's like, my father wants to, cover some of these areas. And I was like, let me just show you the map on Google Maps. And you as a journalist, you're going to know what's going on over there. So that, fortunately, we were able to put that idea together. They weren't insistent.
No, we weren't eager to, you know, get kidnapped by paramilitaries to do the visit.
I wasn't going to mention who's in control there. I was going to leave that.
Oh, we're going to be ambiguous.
I was going to be ambiguous, but that's all right. I left that to the Reuters. But fantastic. I mean, it's really, and you know what? As we wind down this first section with you here on the show, it's just looking. It's a whole different lifestyle. First of all, we just look at the handwriting, beautifully joined but very clear handwriting. And you can tell. I mean, look at the discipline of writing this. It's almost, you know, every couple of days there's a map that's probably the best map ever created of Barranquilla, you know, that he's drawn by hand.
You know?
Today it wouldn't be as clear as this map. And it just, you know, with the Magdalena River and the railway station, which still stands today for all the railway buffs out there. And you know, and other things, he's got this map of the river where he's travelled up along. And then these photos, which are just so carefully been placed in, you know, with those corner pieces that we used to use for photos. Here's a photo of the caption is, here's a donkey having a bath. So, I mean, you know, he's seen a bit of everything, really. And so a donkey having a bath. But when we'll end this last section just saying, you know, you've had this here. And you're transcribing it with your father. I mean, when is the final document going to be completed?
Oh, God. I mean, my father's been at this since 3 years ago, since December of 2011. Mm-hmm. I think it'll go a little bit faster if we sit down at Christmas time and one of us reads and the other types.
Yeah.
But he's been sort of doing it as a solitary pursuit. And it's hard, I mean, to read a sentence and decipher it a little bit and then transcribe it and then go to the next sentence. And, you know, he describes, when he does the transcription, he goes through and he'll describe each photo, you know, on facing pages, photo of this, you know, faded or shows this. And so he's being very circumspect, I think, about preserving what we have.
It is. I mean, it's just amazing. This is almost like a forgotten era, you know, but now it's been recaptured and rescued for your family. I mean, looking through this. So, I mean, so I just remind you here, this is Columbia Calling. We're talking to Julia Sims Cobb, who's originally from Colorado, studied in the UK. But we're looking at her great-grandfather's journal, his diary from 1900 till 1902, here in Colombia. Most of it here in Colombia, then parts of it in Mexico and Guatemala and Costa Rica. But I mean, the bulk of it is in Colombia, and it's just a wonderful, you know, sort of, let's say, heirloom, just taking us back to how things used to be. But we're going to explore this a little bit further in the next section of the show. We're going to talk about, you know, more of what they found in the text between Julia and her father, what they've been able to uncover, and just talk about Colombia, what it must have been like back in 1900, 1902. I mean, Colombians don't know. I mean, that's what's so exciting about it. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall talking to Julia Sims Cobb. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota with Julia Sims Cobb, and we've been talking about, well, Julia's time here in Colombia as a journalist for Reuters and the Washington Post, but also we've been talking about this wonderful diary that she has dating back to 1900, belonging to her great-grandfather, Harry Lewis Cobb, who was, he was on a boat dredging for gold in the Magdalena River and indeed on the Cauca River and in between and various places. Now, Julia, I know that we've talked in other circumstances, but you feel that there's sort of a resonance to your time here with that of your great-grandfather. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, in the reading and the thinking that I've done about the diary, I think the interesting, you know, sort of connecting factor, obviously I want to see connections because it's my great-granddad. But I think the interesting, you know, one of the interesting pieces about it is he's in Colombia in 1900, you know, cusp of the 20th century. And while he's here, the country is in the midst of what's called the Thousand Days War, which is a civil war between the government and the rebels, or the conservatives and the liberals. And so it comes up in the diary a lot. Yeah. And he's sort of, I think, as any young man yearning for adventure would be, sometimes he's like, oh, we're not going to see any battles. And he's a little bit disappointed because they hear rumors and, like, the rebels are coming up this neck of the, or this arm of the river, and the government is over here. And sometimes he writes about, you know, they stop off for supplies and the locals tell them, you know, the rebels think that there's a government boat coming and that means they delay the trip because they don't want to go up the river and have the rebels mistake them for the government and get shot at. So they'll stay there for 2 days until they hear, oh, there's been a confrontation. Now it's safe. Now they know that we're not the government.
It sounds like today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's the interesting tie-in is, you know, he's there at the beginning of this century that really turned out pretty badly for Colombia. You had the Thousand Days War. Then you had La Violencia, you know, mid-century. I mean, before you have the La Cienega massacre of union workers in the 20s. And then you get into, you know, the conflict that we know today, which is, you know, the FARC rebels, the ELN rebels. Then you have the paramilitaries, you have the drug cartels, you know, it sort of spirals. And now, obviously, the government is in peace talks with the largest rebel group, the FARC, and they're progressing, I think, as well as could be expected for, you know, negotiations that are trying to end 5 decades of you know, bloodshed.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of interesting that he was here just as all this stuff is sort of starting to collapse, and I'm here kind of as it's starting to be rebuilt.
I think it's very good. I think I also, like you say, you know, it's not coming to an end. It's trying to be rebuilt. Very clever. All right, you've covered yourself well on that.
Yes.
One. But you're right about that. So for those of you who are not aware, or even consistent, you know, of what's going on, that the FARC guerrillas, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, have been in ongoing peace dialogues with the government's negotiating team in Havana, Cuba, since November 2012. You know, they've come to an end already now in December. But they will be starting up again in January. And, of course, we've all got our fingers crossed, hoping for the positive outcome of this. But it's very true because, you know, we often, as journalists, you know, we have to always write, you know, 220,000 people have lost their lives in the Colombian civil conflict since 1964. But this is 64 years prior to that, this diary. And, of course, there were no records as to, you know, who was disappeared, who what really went on, all of this stuff. So, I mean, he's seeing it firsthand, although it's very similar, and, you know, especially in what you were just saying now, I feel it's another low-intensity conflict. You know, things are happening, but they're sort of round the next creek in the river, or, you know,
rumors
around. So there's a lot of that. That's very interesting. And then, now for me, you know, I've read what you have transcribed so far in this from the diaries, and now I'm looking at the diary before me. It's just wonderful. But of course, of interest to me, of course, was Mompox, which I unfortunately didn't find in there, but Magangay, which is the town, the big town in front of Mompox on the other side of the river, more or less, is the second largest economic driver in Bolivar, the state of behind Cartagena today. And even then, it was obviously very important as a port there on the Magdalena River. Now, so I've sort of noted down a couple of references to Magangay, because today it's not really a very scenic place. It's a port. But if you like ports and you like the chaos, it is actually very good for photos, and there's all sorts of problems with paramilitarism and all of this sort of stuff, and displaced people there. But you have to go through to get to Mompox if you're coming in from the coast, more or less. There are other routes, but more or less. So I've got this one entry from September the 28th, 1900. Because Magangay was attacked and captured by the liberals, you know, it's as if it was like a bad word, you know. It was all the liberals. And then it goes, we wandered around seeing the sights of which none were worth looking at. You know, so I wrote that down. I thought, you know, that's not dissimilar to today either. You know, we wandered around seeing the sights of which none were worth looking at, and that was in October 11th, 1901. But, you know, okay, so let's say 114 years later, not a great deal has changed.
Right, yeah.
Just maybe it's grown anyway. But so tell us a little bit more about the diaries. How have you found it? What has been most striking to you as you go through them? I mean, what do you when you look at it, aside from the fact that people are obviously and clearly, you know, they were letter writers, you know, back in the day. Now we're just email sloppy, you know. These are epistles. These are things to inform not only himself but the family too.
I mean, he's very poetic. You think that an engineer would be sort of dry and scientific, and he writes beautifully, and he writes about the moon and about the stars and about how the moon looks lonely and he's lonely, and you know, he's a very, very literary.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's interesting what you said about the low-intensity conflict, because that does come up. Obviously, he mentions the ongoing battles and mentions that they're trying to avoid them. But there's one incident in the diary where someone that he knew is killed.
Yeah.
He meets a merchant. I think he's a merchant. And they're, you know, spend a couple days together going down the river. You know, they're traveling the same direction, so they go together. And then he hears, you know, they part ways, and he hears a day or two later that almost immediately after they parted ways, someone came upon this man, and it was an old enemy or some debt that hadn't been paid, and they murdered him. And, you know, they're not terribly good friends, but it does kind of hit home for him, and he writes about, you know, this is a man I knew, this man I shared a meal with, and it's hard to think about him being dead. So I think that that's sort of an interesting parallel as well, that, you know, we float along in our middle class Bogota existence, and sometimes it breaks in on you a little bit, and you remember that Colombia isn't brunches and you know, the boutiques of Zona Hay, right?
So. Well, and neither is when you see the photos here of Cartagena, it's not the boutiques of sophisticated Cartagena.
There is no Ferragamo.
There's no Ferragamo. Not even a Benetton, you know. I'm not sure they made lemonade with coconut either
back in the day.
But fascinating that, and of course it is, you know, not to trivialize it, because that keeps it very real. Now, you have some other points that you want to share with us here.
Yeah, I mean, there was thinking about what struck me in terms of while I was reading it. There's one bit that hasn't been transcribed yet, but that I've read, where they go on an excursion for a week, you know, off the, even more off the grid than they already are. So pretty much as far off the grid as one could get. And they're climbing, they want to climb a mountain. I think they're also, you know, sort of scouting for other sites for the gold. But they go up, you know, basically through a swamp, these little, like, tributaries of the river. And they spend a night in this native village. And it's him and their guide and the other American who's on the boat with him. And, you know, he talks about how his revolver and his shotgun are, you know, huge source of curiosity and people don't really know what to do with them. And then he talks about sitting there and he's writing, you know, he's huddled over this light trying to write his entries. And you could see from those entries that, you know, they're written in pencil, they're very tiny, they're scribbled, you know, he's writing them. This is like the piece of paper that he sat there and wrote on in the middle of nowhere. And he writes, you know, the people are looking at him strangely because he's sitting, you know, off in the corner writing. And he says, "Guess they must think I'm a journalist writing a story," which obviously for me is like, you know, it kind of makes my heart skip a beat a little bit, because here I am, you know, three generations later, and I am a journalist, and I'm here, and so...
You're not far. I mean, as the crow flies, you're not far from where he was seated. No. In truth, you know, you've been in these areas as well. How exciting is that? Now, I'm going to draw attention to a little bit. There is a selfie, as we would call it today. There is a selfie in the diary, and it is one of the most phenomenal photos. It's black and white, as you can imagine, but I think it's set up. It looks like he's trying to be sort of audacious.
Swashbuckling,
and somewhat Byronic, you know. He's sort of he's got his knife. He's sort of unsheathing it. It looks like he's crouching down. There's a pistol on his hip, on the belt. There's a traditional local hat on. He's all dressed in white with spats on. I mean, of course, because that's what you would wear when you're
a gentleman wears in the jungle.
But it's just wonderful. I mean, that's how you take a selfie, not one with your, you know, with your food somewhere else. That's a selfie. If I'm to have a, you know, sort of a posthumous fame later on, that's the kind of selfie that I want. But now, you mentioned quickly, though, that there was another gentleman on the boat, an American. His name is mentioned?
At the very, very beginning.
No.
Harry's a big fan of abbreviations.
Okay.
So he calls him EHD for much of the diary. His full name is in here somewhere at the very beginning.
But he's not someone that, like, you haven't tried to trace his family or anything like that to get in touch, because that would be interesting to find the sort of, let's say, the concurrent life journeys. That would be very interesting indeed.
It looks like his name... And his wife also comes down, but she doesn't go on the boat with them.
Uh-huh.
But she is down in Barranquilla with them while they're building the boat.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like his name is... The first mention looks like it's Mr. and Mrs. Gio with a period. So
Giovanni?
George? George Davis.
George Davis. That'd be hard to trace.
Yes.
that would be hard to trace.
Not a super unique name. But actually, one of the interesting things with the names in the diary is my mother's family are the Sims, and my father's family is the Cobb, so I'm Sims Cobb. And he actually makes friends in Barranquilla with a Captain Sims, and it's spelled the same way, which is we have kind of an unusual spelling of Sims. We don't think that it's one of our Sims. We've kind of asked my mom's family, and you know, it's been judged unlikely, but I thought that was also kind of there's lots of little ironic connections like that through the diary, which are sort of cool in hindsight. You know, he meets a Sims, I'm a Sims, and a Cobb. On his way home to the United States, he stops in San Jose, Costa Rica, which is where 45 years later my father was born, because his Harry's son becomes a diplomat, my grandfather, and they live all over Latin America, and that's where my father's born. So there's these nice little coincidences and things that are sort of touching when you have them in hindsight, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's very important. I think it's very important that we reflect on these things from the past. I've got some sort of amateur genealogy, nothing like these diaries, but, you know, relating to my family from, you know, who helped found Montreal at some point, you know. And
you need the keys to the city.
Yeah, I need the keys to the city. Well, my father would probably turn his grave knowing how French it is now. So.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
Not one of those. But anyway, that story. And also, and then heading out west and working on the railways, you know, helping found Canada, really, you know, with that expansion. But I've got photos, and then there's some wonderfully, you know, almost Cyrillic handwriting on their back, which is taking me a good deal of time to try and, you know, unearth who they are. Because it's just difficult. But again, these things are all very personal as well. And like you're saying, it's just so amazing to see this. I mean, just I would love to have a diary of this nature. Now, I mean, in anything else that you found in the diaries that you could share with us, anything? Because I know it's remarkably descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was one sort of almost a stanza that jumped out. Was a description of the end of a New Year's Eve, wasn't it? What did he write in that one? Because it was, I've been writing forever, but I would never have written something like that.
I think the New Year's Eve description is actually one of my favorites. He's still in Barranquilla.
Okay.
They're still building the boat. He leaves Massachusetts in August 1900.
Yeah.
And so they're still building the boat. In Barranquilla, and his entry for Monday, December 31st, 1900 ends, "Don't expect to watch the old year out." And then his entry for the next morning, Tuesday, January 1st, 1901, begins, did what I didn't expect to do last night, saw the new year come in. About 5 minutes before midnight, I was awakened by the booming of cannon, screaming of whistles, and clanging of bells. Thought the rebels had come, sure, but found out in the forenoon it was all in honor of 1901. The racket lasted about an hour, dying out gradually. So I was in at the death of the century.
Wonderful.
Which is...
wonderful. And, you go from the description to sort of like to the banal as well. Mm-hmm. It's like there was one thing I just saw here, made a record today, dug all day and didn't hit a stick.
So he does oscillate between the very poetic and reflective and sort of the, like, I read today, it is hot.
But I like a lot of things in it, but because, there's one thing as well, you've drawn my attention to as well, you said EDH, and so you've mentioned the abbreviations.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way through the beginning, it's like, I went to SS again this morning, as is you. And of course, when I looked at that, it meant nothing to me apart from because I know that sometimes, Navy or merchant boats are called the SS, mm-hmm, something. So I just assumed it was a boat. But you can clarify that. SS actually stands for something else, just to show how different life is today.
Sunday school.
Imagine that. In Barranquilla. So mm-hmm. What kind of...
I think it's a Protestant Sunday school as well, which I don't know where he found these people.
I mean, it gives you a little... I mean, that's something quite insightful into a port city in 1900, the mm-hmm. turn of the 20th century. He could find a Sunday school in which to, study the Bible with like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is possibly more international that back then than it is today in sort of terms of sort of religious tolerance towards sort of mm-hmm. Protestantism, in Colombia. I mean, let's not get into the religion, but I mean, that's really interesting. And of course, wonderfully abbreviated to some SS. And what else is that? Day off and on all day. I mean, it's just... So listen, let's get towards the end of the diary here. Now I'm looking at the pictures of this is Cartagena.
Yes.
And there's something San Jose, it says here, so we're looking at also, and that's leaving Cartagena as well. And now he comes to San Jose. How long did he spend in Costa Rica before moving on?
I believe it was only a couple of days.
Okay, but he's taking a lot of photos.
Yes, I think he goes and plays tourist. He takes the same steamer on the way back home that he took on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
On the way down, he takes it from Massachusetts. They stop in Jamaica, and then they go to Colombia. And then on the way back, they curve up into Central America and sort of hopscotch into a couple of countries in Central America. And then he gets off the boat in Mexico and takes the railroad
mm-hmm.
up across the Rio Grande and then up through the southern United States to Washington, D.C., and then he takes the final train from D.C. to Massachusetts, where his mother meets him at the station, which is his last entry. His last line in the diary is, "Was met unexpectedly by my mother in Northampton, and so went straight home to Worcester."
Northampton, we're talking of the Hamptons. I mean, is that... No, it's got to be...
No.
It's not the Hamptons.
I mean, my East Coast... I'm not an East Coast person. I think Harry was the last real Massachusetts boy among us. Northampton, Massachusetts, I would assume.
So tell me, so let's clarify, why did the family move west to Colorado?
Well, Harry gets married and he has three sons.
Yeah.
my grandfather and his two brothers, and one of them dies very young, in a boating accident. They're adventurous people. And so one of them dies very young, and the other two join the army and are in the army in World War II. And Harry actually dies, I think, before the war begins. He dies relatively young himself.
Okay.
I think he's only in his 50s. And so his two sons, you know, sort of, I guess, lose that connection. They're both in the army and they're moving around. My grandfather joined the Foreign Service, and so was posted abroad. And then my great uncle Harrison became a mining specialist. And so he went out to Colorado, and he's the first family member who lived out in Colorado, and he moved his mother out there, so she leaves Massachusetts. And Harrison was the first family member to live in Colorado, and he lived to be, I think Harrison was 95, 96 when he died, so I actually knew him quite well, because he lived in the town in Colorado that my parents eventually moved to.
Fantastic.
So I knew great Uncle Harrison.
Proper American story, though, isn't it? The whole sort of a go west young man, you know.
Oh, absolutely, go west and you know,
prosper.
Blow things up.
But so this is—I mean, it's fascinating. It really is. It's just we've got a real tale in within these pages, and of course within the family. I mean, it's just—it's very special. I know that your father, you know, obviously cherishes this diary. Mm. Please take care of it.
Yes.
I would suggest getting it out of Columbia and back into
it's going home at Christmas.
Very good. I'd go, maybe a little bit of work on the binding.
Yeah, the back is sort of needs a little TLC.
But it's just wonderful to have seen this. I mean, I think there are historians here in Colombia who would die to see this, but don't let them get their hands on it.
No,
who knows?
I'll
never get it back. Exactly. Yeah, mañana.
No.
So, well, listen, now, when you've transcribed the book, because it is a book, it's a volume.
It's a tome.
Yeah, tome, okay. when you've transcribed it all, what's the plan?
I'm still mulling that, to be honest. Mm. I've written a couple of things about it, or the intros that I've read, or sort of the themes that have been striking me as I'm reading it. So I'm contemplating a lot of options. I think I'd like to write something very long form. Mm-hmm. If not a long form article, then perhaps a very short book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key would be to compare his experience with my experience and draw those parallels and sort of tell this story about Colombia then and Colombia now. Mm-hmm. So I started at the beginning, and I started looking into what Worcester, Massachusetts would have been like for, mm-hmm. you know, a kid born in 1880-something, which is when Harry was born.
Yeah.
And so I started from the beginning, and we'll finish transcribing, and then I think I'll go along. Yeah.
Well, this tethers in quite nicely. A few months ago, I had an author called Brian Kevin on the show, mm-hmm. who wrote a book called The Footloose American, and he follows the Hunter S. Thompson trail through South America, when Hunter S. Thompson went through during the Cold War years.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkably insightful stuff, but he does a comparison of then and now of areas that he went through. So, although this would be, a deeper history, because we're going further back. Now, things that you've written, is there anywhere that we can see them? Is there anywhere that you want to share them with our listeners?
They have been workshopped by some friends, but they're not. They haven't been published anywhere yet.
Okay. You don't have a blog or a website that we can look up?
No, I do not.
Okay, fantastic.
I tweet occasionally. I tweet rather badly, but it exists.
So how can people get in touch with you then by Twitter? Let's say, what is your Twitter handle?
That's what they call it. My handle is... you say arroba yeah, in Spanish, like in Spanish, is at J Sims Cobb, which is SYMMESCOBB.
Okay, very good.
So that's my Twitter handle, and yeah, I guess that's the most public venue I have for sharing the work I've done. But someday there will be a book that you can buy about Harry Cobb and his wanderings down the Magdalena.
That's interesting. No, and we will definitely publicize it and promote it here on Columbia Calling. We'll have you back on when it's out. And
you just want to stroke the diary.
I want the diary. I'm considering changing my surname to Cobb and then claiming it, or being the other person. I was actually.
Davis. You know. Yes, you can be Captain Sims' descendant. Or
something like that. Just long lost.
I did. and father you in.
I did go to school with some cops, so who knows? Ooh. You know, there you go. But very, very interesting. No, we would like to. And of course, if you are interested in getting in touch with Julia and you do know something about this history or something about Columbia in this period of time, or you've got some sort of family heirloom, get in touch. You know, you can get in touch with us at Columbia Calling. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com. And of course, by the website, columbiacallingradio.com. I will pass on the messages to Julia so I can screen anything anything that might be obscene or anything like that, but I can anything that's properly directed at her, I then pass on to her, because we're not going to give out her email here. But anyway, listen, I'd like to thank you, because I know you're on call for Reuters. You know, listen, we're sitting here,
I'm being very naughty,
and
right
she,
now.
And she's sitting there with her BlackBerry in front of her waiting for this, with the thing to ping, you know, with you know, breaking news. So we've been very fortunate to have Julia here on the show with us and talking to us and sharing this you know, piece of family lore. So thank you again, and
thank you
and I wish you all the best of luck, and all, you know, and it will be a fantastic book once you get it together.
I'm excited. There's undiscovered things yet.
This is true. You're going to find more names and more things that you can possibly trace, you know?
Absolutely.
You're going to become an amateur genealogist as well.
Yeah. If only I could draw maps and you know, road grids as prettily as Harry draws them, that would be,
well, it's
that
a different
would be the
era.
Goal.
It was a different era, you know? They were just much more, you know, inclined, because they weren't as...
There's no Google Maps.
Yeah, and we're just all sort of a bit, you know, a bit vagrant in that now, really. We're a bit more lazy. We expect everything at our fingertips, but he had to do everything, and I think that's what's so special about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, listen, I hope you've enjoyed the show, everyone out there. We've been talking to Julia Sims Cobb. Check out her byline when you're reading the news in the Washington Post, and of course, any Reuters news that pops up around you from Columbia, you will see her name, because she is in the thick of it here in Columbia. It's so nice to have someone of you know, strong editorial quality on the show.
Oh,
so
thank you.
We feel very flattered to have Julia here, and thank you for sharing the story. This has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Tune in next week. I will have another interesting show for you out there. Bye-bye.